The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network
on News Talk.
My next guest made history in 2015 as the first British astronaut to visit the International Space Station, where he spent 6 months living and working. And yet, as a child, he never thought that he wanted to be an astronaut. He's bringing the story of his life and his adventures to On Board Gosh Energy Theatre on September the 26th, where he'll talk about the secrets and the science behind why and how humans want to journey into space. And he joins me on the line. Tim, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. How are you?
I'm very well. How is the tour going? You know, for the last couple of years with pandemic interruptions, you've been telling the world your tales.
Yes, we've been really fortunate to just about escape the worst of the pandemic lockdown areas. And the tour's been going great. We were started October last year and in March this year. And so we're back on the road in September. Really excited to be coming to Dublin. And we've been packed out. So it's been great fun.
Now, you obviously were fascinated by the air as a child, but you wanted to be a pilot. The idea of being an astronaut, it appears, did not cross your mind.
Yeah, and I think that's what's really interesting, because it's different now for youngsters today who can grow up and think, wow, we can be join the European Space Agency and we can become astronauts, whereas that wasn't the case when I was growing up. So I was fascinated about aircraft, passionate about aviation. I was a cadet at school and went on and had a career as a pilot. It was only later in my 30s that the door opened to becoming an astronaut.
Before that, it was cosmonauts and astronauts, America and Russia. The Chinese got involved as well. But basically, there were no European astronauts. And even when there was a plan for it, Britain wasn't part of the proceedings.
That's right. When I joined in 2009, we still didn't have a UK space agency and we still weren't contributing to the human spaceflight program. So things have changed now and we have a new astronaut selection process this year. We had 23,500 candidates from all across the EU and it's been fantastic. So great to see so many candidates applying.
Now, you give great comfort to those who did not particularly excel in school. How did you do?
Yeah, well, I'm very honest about my academic abilities. And when I was, you know, doing A-levels, I kind of took my mind off the ball, really, with the studies. I think flying took the better of me. And I got a C, D and an E at my A-levels. I left school at 18 and I joined the British Army. So it wasn't until I was 33 that I went back and I got a degree in flight dynamics. But I do say to students that I've never studied harder from the moment I left school, and my life has been one long list of studying, but you know, it just didn't happen for me during my school years, and that can be the case for some students. Not everybody learns at the same rate, and not everybody's inspired by the same things. And often, when we leave school, that's when we start to get inspired by the job that we're doing.
Now, the job that you were doing, you were flying, of course, but you became a test pilot, and that I would have thought is one of the scariest things you can do, because the idea is to push an aircraft pretty much to its limit.
It is one of the most challenging, but also one of the most rewarding things that I've ever done. We do try and mitigate the risk as much as possible. We're not just kind of cowboys who are going out there and throwing these things around. We do it very incrementally. But ultimately, you have to take an aircraft and do something that nobody has ever done with it before. And so there's always risk involved. And, you know, I love the challenge of that. And I love the technical side of understanding how aircraft fly.
And what sort of aircraft were you flying? I mean, maybe the Official Secrets Act kicks in here, but were they fighter aircraft? Were they bomber aircraft? Were they, well, whatever?
For me, it was mostly helicopters, but I went through the Empire Test Pilot School at RAF Boscombe Down, and they get you to fly fast jets, heavy transport, helicopters, everything. So we get qualified to fly anything. But then operationally, I was mostly focusing on Apache helicopter. That's what I flew for 10 years, but also all sorts of different other types of aircraft as well. Yeah. And working with Special Forces aircraft as well.
It's often been said to me about helicopters that basically they want to self-destruct. That's the technology, and you kind of just hang it together. But, you know, left to its own devices, it would.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny, but you know, an aircraft tends to want to fly with wings. It will just glide and naturally come down, but a helicopter's thrashing itself to bits, really. So you have to be perhaps a bit more careful. We do wear parachutes above 3,000 feet, but frankly, in a helicopter below that, there's no point in even wearing a parachute. So yeah, there's some extra challenges there.
Now, when the ad appeared for astronauts to join the European Space Agency, what prompted you to jump?
Oh, you know, as a test pilot, that was the next step. It was the pinnacle of what you could try and achieve. And it seemed to me that everything I was doing as a test pilot was exactly what I could do as an astronaut, you know, pushing the boundaries, exploring new pieces of kit and equipment and just not doing it in Earth's atmosphere, doing it outside of Earth's atmosphere. So it was a natural kind of next step to try and aim for.
Now, the process, there were, 8,000 candidates or more, and you got through, but still a lot of further tests before you finally got down to the last 10.
Yes, and the selection process goes on for a whole year. And they do start with the academics just to make sure that you've got that kind of cognitive ability. But that's only really done in one day. The rest of the year is looking at your character, your personality, teamwork, leadership, communication, all of those kind of soft skills that are so important, not just for being an astronaut, but so important in every job that we do.
Now, you eventually went up to the European Space Station or the International Space Station. And it's interesting when you are strapped to the top of that rocket. Do you have any rehearsals for that kind of thing? I mean, do they strap you to smaller rockets to accustom you to the G?
Well, we do get strapped into a centrifuge to accustom us to the G-forces. We practice the launch profile, the re-entry profile, and actually re-entry is more punishing in terms of G-force than launch. So, yeah, we do practice that so we're used to it, but nothing can fully prepare you for that experience of launching up on a rocket. I mean, it's 300 tons of fuel. The noise and the vibration's phenomenal. And actually, the most fun part of a rocket launch is not the bit that you see at the launch pad. It's the bit up in space. Once you're there and the rocket goes horizontal, you've got to get the speed on, because otherwise you'll just fall straight back down to Earth again. So to get to orbit, you have to get to 17,500 miles per hour, 25 times the speed of sound. And that's the ride. That's the kind of thrill, if you like. It's just unbelievable.
Now, we would imagine that the actual launch is perhaps the most mission critical point, most dangerous. Then you get rid of your fuel tanks, they fall away, and then you carry on to the space station. I know that re-entry must be nerve-wracking, but in the middle of all of this, you got to dock. And, you know, that's a delicate process, I would imagine.
It is a delicate process. You know, in our docking, unfortunately, things didn't go to plan. It was supposed to be automated, but the systems failed and our commander had to take control and try a manual docking. And the first one went quite badly wrong, nearly ended up in a collision. So we managed to get docked on the third attempt, but it was definitely one of those times when the hairs stand up on the back of your neck. And we, you know, we had to rely on our training to kick in, really, to recover the situation. But it is always a dangerous time when you're bringing two objects together in space.
Yeah. So your training did kick in, because we're all familiar with the voice of the airline pilot who says, "We're encountering a little bit of turbulence at the moment. Please return to your seats fast." And the plane is rocking, but his voice is not rocking, or her voice is not rocking. It's cool, calm, and collected. So that's how you've got to be.
You have to, yeah. Try and mask the adrenaline that's coursing through your veins at the time. But no, it is important to kind of maintain that clarity of focus and thought. And sometimes, you know, time is of the essence. You've got to make split-second decisions that are going to have a huge impact. And it was a similar case out on a spacewalk when my crewmate Tim Kopra, his helmet started filling with water. And that was another time we had to think very quickly, very rapidly, and recover the situation. So, yeah, there are definitely times when the training pays off. That's why it takes about 6 years of training before you get to fly your first mission.
You ran the London Marathon in space.
Yes. So I knew I was going to be up there during my 6 month period. It was going to cover the time when the marathon was being run in London. And I was an ambassador for the Prince's Trust, and they had a team running the marathon on the ground. So I thought, well, why not join that team and run it from the space station? So that sounded like a good idea at the time. It wasn't such a good idea when I was doing it. It was a pretty painful experience.
Yeah. Do you have a natural advantage, though, being weightless? I would imagine lots of the people on London Bridge would love to be weightless as they make that tortuous crossing.
There are some advantages, but what we do is we wear a harness. It's like a bungee system that keeps us pinned to the treadmill. So it tries to replicate our full body weight. It can get about 75 to 80% of our body weight. So it's not quite 100% body weight, but it's all resting on your collarbones pretty much. So on the one hand, it might sound like you've got a bit of an easier time, but on the other hand, it's like running the London Marathon wearing yourself in a rucksack. It's incredibly hard work.
Yeah. No matter how smooth it all seems, and you mentioned the docking difficulties there, and I suppose the terrifying prospect of re-entry and what might happen should things go wrong. But the impression that the public might have is that, well, with the modern technology we have these days and able to land rovers on the moon and on Mars and all the rest of it, returning to the moon would be a walk in the park. Is that so?
Oh, well, if only it were the case. I mean, space is so, so technically challenging. It's so difficult. Every time you launch a rocket, you know, there's a chance that things could go wrong. We still have about a 1 in 10 failure rate on rocket launches, even today. Where you constantly, you know, using new technology, sustainable techniques, and reusing parts of spacecraft. So it's still very much a test program, and we have to, you know, approach everything we do with a high degree of caution. But I think the level of risk that we take these days is appropriate for what we're trying to do.
And you would go back into space given half a chance?
Absolutely. I don't know any of my colleagues who wouldn't. And we've got some really exciting missions coming up. We're part of the Artemis program, which is going back to the moon in just the next couple of weeks. We're going to see Artemis 1 launch from Florida. This thing's nearly the size of the old Saturn V. So that's going to be phenomenal. And next year, we'll see the first crew go around the moon again since, you know, 1972.
Listener wants to know, did you have to learn to speak Russian?
Yes, we do have to speak Russian. When I launched in 2015, the Russians were the only nation flying humans into space. And so we launched with the Russians, and we had three Russian crew members with us on board the space station. So they had to learn English. We had to learn Russian.
Yeah, we know there are obviously political difficulties at the moment, and they want to pull out of all of this cooperation, and not immediately, but in time. Finally, Tim, I should ask you, what can people expect in the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre on September 26th?
Well, the My Journey to Space tour is basically an immersive experience. It's interactive. It's as entertaining as possible. It's to try and take you on a journey to space without kind of physically taking you into orbit. So it does cover my life story, but it's also really the story of astronauts today, about how we train, how we prepare for space, and what it's like to launch, to live and work up there, to do a spacewalk. I'll take you on an orbit of planet Earth, show you the views, talk about spacewalking and a bit about the future as well. So there's a lot to cover.
Well, it sounds like a fascinating show in prospect. 26th of September in BGE, and you can check out Ticketmaster or the Bord Gáis Theatre's website for tickets. Major Tim Peake, thank you very much for joining us on the programme today.
Thank you, Pat. Great talking to you.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.